Hi, I'm Heidi Harriet. Welcome to Doggone Good Information. You know, today I'm going to bring up something I've talked about before, which is Biden's German Shepherds. So they're, one of them is in the news again. I don't know that it's a new story, but apparently he's up to 24 bites, many of which caused medical attention for the Secret Service and folks that he bit. I'm bringing that up because I'm going to interview somebody today on the podcast who's a police canine dog trainer. It's really fascinating. I'm a geek about this stuff. I really love training, and that it's all comes down to the same, whether it's your pet dog, these police dogs, service dogs, even the other animals that we train. I tell people when I am training for them, think service dog. In other words, set the bar high, and they won't disappoint you. So we're going to get into that conversation, but it kind of begs a question for me. It's not the first time the Bidens have trouble with their dogs, and this is not political. It's just I'm really, concerned about it because they are German Shepherds. But I think it's really important that we train our dogs and we make sure that there's a safe environment. And if that dog is not with the right person or, you know, becomes unsafe, then they should be get some additional training and be with somebody that can handle them. A dog that's bitten that much might be considered to be put down as well, which I don't say happily. It makes me very sad because I think people failed the dog. But I also wonder, a fellow like my next guest, Hank Wong, would consider that dog would have been good for police work had it gotten started on the right track. But it obviously has some aggression that's not being dealt with. But if this were just the public sector and it was in our neighborhood and there was a dog that had caused that much trouble, it would be a different story. So you can look it up. It remains a story in the news and has been for a while. And now I'd like to, I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Hank Wong. He's was a police officer, and he's now a consultant and dog trainer across the United States. Hi, Hank. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm thrilled. This is something I've wanted to do for a while, to interview somebody who works with police canines, does dog training for the police dogs. And your mutual friend introduced us. And so you were in Orlando. I'd like you to tell that story. You were working as a policeman in Orlando and got into the canine unit.
Yes, ma'am. So I started out as a police officer, and like any other specialty job in the department, you pretty much for all intents and purposes, any police department, any sheriff's office that you join, you're going to have to do your road time. You're going to have to learn the learning system and learn to be a cop, so to speak. And then from there, you can branch off. You can be a detective in whatever bureau, if it's like violent crimes, economic crimes, financial crimes, property crimes, and then there's other options, drug units, marine units. We at one point in time we had a horse unit, a mounted unit, yeah. And then there's canine. So yes, so I was with the agency for, we'll say, let me think now, 5, 6. About 6 years on, I had with the agency, and an opening came available in canine, and I had always wanted to work with dogs. I've always had dogs in my life as a child. We had our family dogs, so I was always into animals, and I was always into dogs, and I just knew that was ultimately what I wanted to do at the police department. So this opportunity arose, and I jumped on it, and 14 years later, I was fortunate enough to stay in the unit for the longevity of my career, and I retired out of the unit. So yeah, it's like any other specialty unit with any other police department. You, for all intents and purposes, you put in a letter of interest and a packet, and pretty much you're just giving them a synopsis of your work ethic, what schools, what training you've had, and then you go through for our particular unit at the time, there was a physical agility test, and also an interview process. So, like I said, you know, fortunately for me, my past, my work ethic, and just everything fell into place for me. So, I found myself on the unit. And
so what kind of dog when you started, probably shadowed somebody to learn the ropes, but what kind of dog and what kind of work were you doing with your canine?
Okay. So initially, when I got onto the unit, the dog I inherited was assigned to someone previously. So, that handler left the unit and his dog was still, he was actually in his prime. He was, I think, three or four years old.
Oh, okay.
So very still young in his career, right? But
what kind of dog?
This was a German Shepherd.
Okay.
And off the top of my head, I don't remember what his lineage was. What, as far as if he had some type of working title in the sport world, or if or what country he was from.
Okay.
So I'll kind of fast forward, and it sounds, I know people that are watching this going to be like, oh my God, like you're such an impersonable, like no heart. I know about your first dog. So long and short, what happened was I inherited this dog. I went through the police canine training with him. And then about a year into his career, he came down with spondylosis, a shifting of his vertebrae.
Oh.
And yeah, so unfortunately I had to retire him. He was good to live out his life as a pet, if you will, and not going through the rigors of jumping and climbing and fighting and just having traumatic injury or traumatic experiences to him, because you know we're for all intents and purposes we're sending these dogs into unknown circumstances and battle. And the last thing we want to do is obviously have something go wrong with him and cause this dog to be paralyzed. So long and short, the vet was like, hey, he can live his life out as a pet and just be perfectly fine as long as he's not running, jumping up over things and causing that vertebrae to shift any more than it needs to be. So long and short, I get off on tangents here. So every now and then you have to smack me back into the original question. So long and short, because I only worked him for a year, his previous handler, the one that had him before me, worked him for, I think, 2 years. So obviously they had a tighter bond and a closer relationship than I did. But so I say that to say this, that when it came time, I reached out to him. I said, hey, this is what's going on with the dog. My wife and I, at the time, we only had our personal pet, which was a Weimaraner. And so, that and the police dog, we only had two dogs in the house, and we were, you know, I was going to have to get another police dog. So we were okay with having three dogs in the house. Like, you know, we can manage it, but I just wanted to give the guy, the first dibs, if you will.
Did because, he take like I said, the dog?
And so he took the dog back.
Oh,
yes,
fantastic.
Ma'am.
That's a good story. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So he ended up living quite a while, and like I said, he got fat, dumb, and happy in the retired world. So
okay. So tell me about the dog you got then, and what kind of work did you do? It? Who trained the dog? How did that work?
This is kind of where depending on what agency and what their training protocol or their agency protocol is, it can vary. But for the state of Florida, to be a certified canine handler, you have to go through a state mandated canine course. It's basically a basic canine patrol handler course. Let me get my math straight. It's a 480 hour course where you're just learning the basic police applications of canine, police canine work. So in that you have a section of obedience, building searches, area searches, and criminal apprehension, and a portion of tracking. So all of these particular disciplines, at the end of this 480-hour course, you have to do a state mandated practical course where you go out and you perform with your dog in front of two state evaluators, and they check off on you whether you pass or not.
And this is so, you actually training the dog through this course?
So yes and no. In this particular course, because I received this animal as a finished product, if you will, he had already been through this course with his previous handler and had been working the road for a couple of years at least. So he had caught in plenty of people. He had plenty of catches, engagements, and, wow, and bites. So I got a finished product. So I still had to go through, because I was a green handler, I had to go through this whole course, sure, with this dog. And so fortunately for me, the dog carried me. He knew what was going on. It was just a matter of me learning to read this dog in a working application, if you will, how to just pick up on all his little nuances and getting the routine down for bite work and setting them up for searches and so forth. So
as an animal trainer, I can fully appreciate, cause I train animals for people, but then I'll have people come and work with my trained animals so that they understand it. So I can appreciate that you having a dog that already had the training was a great way to move into that, for sure.
So yes, it's right. So yeah, it depends on, you know, it's weird. It depends on who you talk to and it depends at what point in your career you are. Cause initially when I started this journey, I got this finished animal, and basically, like I said, I just kind of put a saddle on him and I rode him off, and he kind of showed me the ropes, if you will.
Yeah.
And I was initially, when I got this dog, I was adamant. I'm like, this is the way to go. Like, because like you and I talked about previously, it's always the idiot on the other end of the lead that fouls things up. Right. Yes. So to have this dog working for me, like it was for me, I was like, yes, that's where it's at. It makes life easier for the handler. But then as my profession and my tenure in canine prolonged, I was kind of like, you know what? No, I think it's a good thing for a handler to get a green dog, and you have to train these, yes, animals from scratch to learn how to do all these tasks, if you will. I had to go through this at the time. It was a 400-hour course. Since I was in canine, the state upped it by an additional 2 weeks, so it was a 12 week course overall. But at the time, I went through this 400-hour course, and it was just the old school, what we would call the hang and bang. So you're constantly giving corrections on the choke, the pinch, the collar, to manipulate this animal into your whatever behavior you're trying to get out of him. And there's, at the time, right, there was very little, positive reinforcement, if you will. Right. So it was really avoidance, escape avoidance training. A lot of times the animals are just kind of like, oh, okay, I'll do this. It sucks, but I'll do it because I don't want to feel the positive punishment. Right. So again, going back to what I was saying, like as a cop, like we're just so set in our way of doing, like, it's gotta be this way. Whereas, you know, when you're working with animals, and especially these high drive dogs, you really got to start using that hamster in between your ears and get it to run on that wheel so that you can kind of, yeah, figure out what's going on. Cause you know, even back then when I first got into the business of police canine, I was like, okay, like the biggest salvation for us is we select these dogs that for all intents and purposes, they're born and bred for this, mm-hmm, this type of work. Like, so we typically select dogs from vendors that go overseas to Europe and purchase them off of either breeders or sports enthusiasts. and they buy these dogs, and whether they're titled in some type of sport, whether it's Shih Tzu, Mondeoring, KMPV, whatever the discipline is, it always kind of mocks or mimics some type of military or police work in that the dogs sure. are asked to perform some type of obedience task, some type of biting task, and some type of searching task. So it falls right in line with police work, right? So
yeah, so you're starting with a dog that's, you know, ready and prepared for that type of work, bred for that type of work.
100%, 100%. And if we're not, and you know, now as the demand gets higher, sometimes we're not fortunate. I don't want to say fortunate. I shouldn't say it that way, but sometimes the only training in the dog that we get is that they can chase the shit out of a ball because they have prey drive out the roof, and they can bite the shit out of some type of equipment because that's kind of what they've been sure. indoctrinated from the time they were born and well. Right. So sometimes we get these dogs that just absolutely, again, they have drive out the roof, and we kind of have to harness and channel all that stuff.
Sure.
And so going back to the original thing, like I was talking about, you know, back then, like, I knew, like looking at it, I'm just like, there's, you know, like there doesn't always have to be conflict, right? Like, I get there's a point in place for corrections and whatnot, but I'm like, if there's a way that we can entice this dog to do these things, like it can just be so much more crisp and clear, and we can kind of communicate with this animal, like what we want. Like, I mean, just to caveat and go off on a little side tangent, it's like when I first got into this, my trainers were like, no, there's no food and training. Like, we just guide the dog. And a lot of the obedience positions, it was all compulsion compliant training, like, you know, forcing the positions and then coming off of that pressure when they completed it. And then we would throw them a toy, and, you know, in our simple human minds, we would be like, okay, that they got it. Well, no, as you know, there's so many steps to break down and go into simplistic one step routines of cause and effect. And so like now, fast forward now to this day and age for me, like now, Mike, whenever I get a new student, a new team, if you will, a new handler and a new dog, my first 2 weeks are all hand feedings. It's like, no, like, you're the new alpha, you're the new pack leader. Like, this, regardless of how old this dog is, like, he or she needs to know that you're the one who brings survival to them,
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah.
And my feedings are always training based. So I'm like, you know, for the sake of argument, I don't have my handlers feed them all at one sitting, whether it's a morning sitting or an evening sitting, or if you have an afternoon, like, no, don't feed this animal two to three times a day. Feed this animal throughout the day and ask for behaviors, and don't even ask, like, just kind of lure, like, just, you know, the simple stuff that you as a professional trainer, you take for granted. I was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. But like for people that are just not savvy to it, it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, and now, like, you're number one, we're taking a lot of stress out of this animal's life. And two, like, now we're kind of enjoying the honeymoon phase, if you will. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, and then I just kind of, as time kind of went on, I just kind of picked and kind of got in bed, if you will, with every resource that I could exploit. You know, like anything else, like, you see someone or some type of system and it's working out, and you're like, oh, like, you know, there is a way, right? Or a better way, right? Like I tell everyone, like, listen, my way is just a way. Like, right, it's not the way, it's just a way. Package it, right. Take it, whether you like it or not, you know, and if you do, and if it works out for you, tell the world that it's yours. Tell the world that that's your oyster. You plucked it, you shucked it, it's all yours, right? Now, if you get some some heat from it. And people are tell you like, hey, you're an idiot. We're like, I go put it on me. Say, hey, that Chinaman Hank told me to do that. So
there definitely is leadership. You're looking for leadership and to be the alpha, mm-hmm. but it's also operant conditioning, right? It's a quadrants, but we can focus more 100%. On the positive. Yeah. And I totally, 100%. as a generational animal trainer, I appreciate that and understand where you're coming from. And sometimes people get it done differently, but they're typically still working within the quadrants. You know, they're just taking a little different approach to it, right?
Yes, because you know, it's funny you say that because when I started getting into this and started following heavy and reading up and following other trainers, and you know, as I was picking stuff up, I'm like, we're already doing a lot of this stuff, like even the classical conditioning, like pairing an unconditioned response with a behavior and rewarding. I'm like, yeah, we're doing that already. It's just, you know, we're not wrapping our heads around it. And then, you know, like people are like, oh my God, you're getting all geeky. I mean, no, it's like, if you have a system in place and you can follow it and you see results, and like, it's just so much easier to follow, to know why.
Right.
Why and this animal is responding to your request, if you will. Yeah. And if you can make life easy for them and communicate this cause and effect, and the dogs can link this with a final a marker, a terminal bridge, like now, like our life has been made easy. Like, and you still have these old cadre that just get stuck on their ways. Yeah. You know, like I talked about with you, like currently, since I've retired, I now contract out and if I'm not doing stuff on the tactics end with shooting and driving and whatnot, I do dog work. And so part of my work on the dog end is one of my contracts is going around the country evaluating bomb dogs and then doing some train ups with them. And you'd be surprised, like, we kind of take for granted the conversation we're having. We kind of take that for granted because there are still agencies and trainers and handlers out there who are still stuck on their ways of paying their animal for behavior at source and trying to time out, like for the sake of argument, like when I'm doing odor detection, I use a release. I use a verbal marker for the final release when my dog or a dog comes the final response on the source of some particular odor, whether it's the bomb, the drugs, or the cadaver, whatever that source of odor is, when they give me that picture perfect final response, whether it's a sit and stare or just a stare or down the stare, I mark it with a verbal release. They come flying back to me for their toy, for their food or whatever. And some of these old school cadres still can't wrap their head around that. They're like, no, we don't want our animals leaving source for their toy. I'm just like, this is where you're not wrapping right. this concept around your head. Like, once you release them, the pal, like I tell, I treat these adult cops sometimes like children. I'm like, use your words like a big boy, a big girl. Once you use that release, they know you've captured that moment in time and the exercise is over. And now it's like payday's coming regardless. So, you know,
Hank, I was just telling somebody had a dog, a board and trained dog this week. And I'm talking with Hank Wong, who's a police canine dog trainer and now consultant. I was just telling someone that when you're good with your release, you're like you're saying the marker, that's really target training. But you and I don't actually use the clicker, right? Or clicker training,
right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you catch it at the right time, your words can be the same as the clicker. It's the timing of it, right?
100%. And
yeah, so I was trying to explain to the folks whose dog I was training that, good, like right there, that's exactly what I want from you. And we're highlighting all the positive we can, and when we need to, we let them know unwanted behavior if we need to do that type of thing. So I love that you're talking about that because it was on my radar. And again, people listening to this are kind of equating it to their pet dogs as well. So it's such timing is so important. I'm totally infatuated with how the bomb dogs are trained, the odor detection. I want to get into that some more. So you had told me initially there's a full service dog, and then there are different areas that dogs will do that they specialize in. And tell us a little bit more about that. What does it mean to be full service? And if not full service, what does it mean?
So for us, a full service dog is interchangeable with people saying a patrol dog. And like I said, patrol dogs, full service dogs are the ones that are on the canine units that are actually looking for people, right? So, and it doesn't always mean that you're out there looking or hoping to find criminals and that you're gonna bite this person. We use those animals to also look for missing and endangered people. So, we use animals to track down whether you're missing from a hospital or a child
who's missing,
small child that has left the house. Right. So, yeah. So we use these dogs for people hunting, if you will. And then, like I said, in our particular unit, our full service dogs were also what we call dual purpose, meaning their primary purpose was for searching for people. And then their secondary job was, like we talked about, either looking on my unit, it was searching for bombs or drugs. Now, to caveat, there are some agencies out there that have strictly full service dogs for patrol work and patrol work only. In other words, they're out there looking for people and they're doing searches at, you know, buildings, areas, just looking for people. And they have no secondary responsibilities in terms of looking for some type of specialized odor, whether it's drugs, narcotics, firearms, electronics, or cadavers. It's this dog's primary purpose is to go out there and manhunt, if you will.
So the dogs that are manhunting, they're tracking through a smell. Is that how and so do you introduce them to something of the person or if you can, they're looking for, and then how does that work?
So, like any other odor detection work out there, we just pair we make a pairing. We bridge a relationship of cause and effect, if you will. So in that sense, with this is just real simple. With a bite dog, if you will, we just engage in some type of tease up. For me, this is how I did my animals. We do a tease up of some type of helper or what we call a decoy in equipment. The dog knows, like we talked about, these particular dogs that we select, they know that bite work is their bread and butter. So we agitate them a little bit up and we go and for the sake of argument, I'll run whatever, let's say just 20, 25 yards right behind a tree. We send the dog, he comes, and at this point it's purely visual, right? Like at a distance of 15 to 25 yards, the dog knows that I'm dead behind that tree. He or she will run out, turn the corner, engage me. Okay, good. Now for all intents and purposes, we've kind of given this animal what they wanted, right? They know that that was the end goal. From there, it's real simple. We just kind of take that behavior, and now instead of going behind a tree, I'll conceal myself in some bushes, right, where the dog will come and run. He or she knows I'm in that proximity, that area, sniff around, engage me. And again, now at some point we just add layers to the game, if you will, right? Okay. So now we make it to where the dog is actively hunting using his nose, because inherently when that dog is sending out and running out and looking for me, if you will, when we make it very basic as the first step, like if he or she is running out behind the tree, inherently that dog, that animal is taking in all these odors, all this scent, right?
Sure.
Whether it's just my odor, my sweat, my skin cells, my funk, or the equipment that I'm wearing. Collectively, this dog is putting this all together, and we just kind of let them know that, yep, this is the path we're going. This is what we want you to do. And we pay them for that behavior, if you will, right? They found me, you get what you want. Here's the bite, you know, engage them in good sparring, if you will. Let them, and then the decoying, that's a whole nother art form, and to dance the dance, if you will, with the dog, to let them know that, you know, you're doing well, that, you know, that it's this behavior that I want out of you. I want you to engage this person. I don't want you just
verbal? Are you using verbal cues at that point to talk?
A lot of times I don't initially, if anything, I'll allow my handlers to give verbal cues. Like you just talked about, good. That's about it. That's all I want out of you. Because like I tell my handlers, what is more meaningful to you as a small child when you went fishing with whoever, your mom and your dad? If your parent caught that fish, hooked it, set the hook, reeled it all the way in, and about 10 feet from the surface, handed you that fishing pole and said, all right, there you go, catch that fish. Like, did you really catch it? As opposed to if you sat there and you waited it out, you were patient, you let that fish bite the hook, you set it, you fought that thing coming in from all the way to the bottom of the ocean and bring it, right? So I want this animal to learn on its own. So to get back to your question, a lot of times in that case scenario, as a helper or a decoy, I give into all that the animal's giving to me. I want my animals to be proactive in this hunt. I want them to not just go out there and, okay, I'll do this. No, I want them to go with all the enthusiasm and all the energy that they can. And because at the end of the day, we're asking these animals to save lives, right? If it comes down to it, like we're sending these animals into unknown territories, uncharted waters sometimes, and where they will encounter people with guns and knives and sticks. And so we need this dog to fight through any amount of pressure or pain so that they can win that fight. So yes, as a decoy, when this initially starts, when they engage me and they bite, I see where I gauge the animal. I see what their true intents are. I see I'm looking for if they're biting for fun, if they're biting for intensity, if they're biting for resolution of conflict, or if they're just biting out of defense because, like, holy shit, dad, you got me in a dark room. And right. So,
yeah.
And if that's the case, that's not the end of the world. That's fine. The fact that this animal is staying engaged, I'll take that. And so if I see that little bit of hesitation, me as a helper, right. So that's why as a police dog trainer, I always kind of make it a priority that if you're going to be catching dogs, meaning letting them bite on you, like, I want you to have a trainer mindset, because anyone, I shouldn't say it like this, but like, right, it takes some type of physical ability to work an animal, right? Because when you have this thing coming at you at 25, 30 miles an hour, like, you have to have good technique so you're not hurting, number one, the dog. I tell everyone, like, when I was working, I was like, I don't give a shit if you get hurt. I care more about my animal than I do you.
We care about the animals first.
But it's the God's honest truth. Let's just be honest, right? Like, so, I want the technique to be right. I want the physical part of it to be, you know, as good as it can be. But then on the mental side, I need you to read this animal and find out what he or she is thinking. Because if we have that dog that's kind of on the fence, like, okay, I'll just do this because it's kind of in my DNA and this is what you're asking of me, but I'm not too sure. If I play that role and I become his or her beta and I submit, that, you know, that whole empowerment of that particular moment, that's in where we, like, what I always call the light bulb moment. When I see that dog puff that chest out and walk out, like, oh, okay, yeah, I own, you know what, I just pissed on that tree, but I still own this entire city block. Like, that's what I want this animal to come out of these encounters, these training sessions. So
can you, so if you have a bite, if your dog is tracking a bad guy, and they'll track him, and then do they need a command from you to actually go to the next level to bite or go after the person, and can you call them off? Will they bite or hold on until you call them off, or how does that work?
So two parts. So to your original question, will they automatically bite? Yes. If for the most part, most animals, they know that when they're in this particular engagement that they're looking for someone, it's they're very smart, right? Like, mm-hmm. like you and I know, like these animals, these dogs, they're smarter than most people.
We're dumbing our animals down generally in this point in life. So I totally understand what you're saying. Yes.
So just based on a lot of times the equipment that you put on the animal for whatever particular job, they know that, okay, I'm going out to track, I'm going out to do a building search, an area search. Right. I know that I'm looking for someone. And so to answer your first question, yes, if you're out tracking or you're searching for someone and you've given your canine and all the stuff is all, it's like we talked about, it's all classical conditioning. We're giving our announcements, right? So I'll back up to the original training scenario. When I do that initial runoff where I run off and hide behind the tree and my handler releases that dog, prior to the releasing of that dog, we go through a canine announcement where we announce who we are, what we're doing, and what the consequences are if you don't surrender or give up. And then we give the dog the search command to go, whatever it is for your particular unit or your agency, and the dog goes and searches out this person and he engages them. So all of that stuff all come, right, as you know, repetition, this all builds up. So like when we go to the real world and we put the equipment on, if we put a tracking harness on, the dog knows, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. And and we, right. So yes, 100% for the most part, if you're on a search or a track and you're working your dog on the lead, as you get closer, and that's where reading this animal comes into play. You have to see where the intensity picks up. You have to see how the dog is casting his or her head, sniffing back and forth, looking around. Like this is where you have to kind of put your big boy pants on and start using that brain of yours and figure out where this person is. And then once you have some type of confirmation, if you will, that they're either in these bushes or behind this door, you make your announcements, you know, and it depends the severity of the crime, you know, whether they're armed with a gun, armed with a knife, you know, those dictate, you know, for each agency, it varies.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an armed individual with a gun, like, you know, some agencies will be like, okay, you gave your initial canine announcement, and now to jeopardize, to make another announcement would further jeopardize the safety of the animal and you and your squad mates. You can allow the dog to go ahead and engage this person and bring him out. And then yes, to have the dog out on verbal command. That's one of the requirements of the state certification in the criminal apprehension routine, is that your dog has to release a bite off of verbal command only.
Oh, okay.
Now, sometimes, like, right, sometimes the animals, like, it's in the middle of that, it's in the heat of the moment, it's battle. Sometimes you will have to coerce that animal to come off the bite, right?
Right. That's They've all. Gotten so worked up and such drive. Right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So,
I can see that. So, it's true with 100%. People, too, you know.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, it's, and you know, like I've always said, you know, that's why the bite itself, it's kind of a last resort, if you will. We, like, for my particular agency, we give canine warnings, we give announcements, and then in that case that you're talking about, if we track them down or we narrow them down to a certain area, we can see them, we have visual confirmation of them in something, we give them commands like, hey, listen, I see you in the car, I see you under the car, come out now. If you don't, you're going to get bit. And then it's right. Life is all about choices. You dictate what I do. But in the day, like, this dog and I, we have to be safe and we have to go home.
Yes. So let's talk about scent dogs now. And so these are primarily the tracking are primarily German shepherds.
So it varies with whatever, with, I guess, with what.
And the Malinois.
Yes, ma'am. Malinois. So it just comes down to what's available from the vendors and a lot of times what your trainers, what their preferences are. So for our particular unit, we had German Shepherds, Dutch Shepherds, and Belgian Malinois. Okay. Those were all part of our patrol unit. Now, with that said, our single purpose odor detection dogs, meaning the dogs that were simply used for sniffing out drugs, bombs, electronics, again, firearms, and
cadavers.
Those can, again, we've
You said floppy-eared dogs when we talked about
that. We use
which I can appreciate. Yeah.
Yep, we use anything from labs to German short-haired pointers. What else have we
used? Any hound dog type breeds?
We don't. The hounds are typically used for the tracking purposes.
Okay.
And my agency, we did not have bloodhounds. The county that I worked in, they did, and the state has bloodhounds. But also with that said, we also had pointy-eared dogs for single odor detection purposes. Okay. We had a couple of German Shepherds and some Malinois that were single purpose detection dogs.
I can see that. And how often do they, what's the ratio or rate of success with the scent dogs? Do they miss the scent sometimes? Or are they typically pretty good about finding it if it's there, kind of a thing, like drugs?
So to answer your question, yes, do they miss? Absolutely, right? At the end of the day, it's an animal. And then there's all kinds of variables that you can get into as far as whether it was threshold or whether there were masking agents. But 100%, like you can't ask, you can't expect anything to be perfect, right?
Right.
Including machines, right? So 100%, there's the reality of it is that they may or may not miss, right? In training, right? So in training, if we have a miss, like my thing was acknowledge it, right? The worst thing you can do is lie and falsify your records, because now you're talking about your number one, your integrity, and then number two, like now you're just digging a hole for yourself. So my biggest thing was, like, in training, we addressed the problem. Okay, we missed X, Y, or Z, you know, whatever the environment was, whatever the concealment method was. And the best we can do is that we try to recreate that type of scenario, right? We may not get it perfect, but we'll try to use the same type of weight, the same type of threshold, and we'll try to create a scenario where we can reintroduce that odor and have the dog succeed at it, right?
Sure.
And then all we can do is document it, log it, say that, yep, on this day and this time, this is what happened. This is what we did to remediate it. And then these were the responses after we remediated it. And so hopefully after that, you know, you just, as long as you're staying true to your training and true to your routine, then hopefully those misses are less than often.
What age do you start training? And do you start foundation work first? Do these dogs require foundation work, or do you go right into the specialty work? Are you working on sit, stay, come, go, those things first, or do you get dogs that already have that and then you start with the specialty? And what age range are we talking about for the dogs?
Okay. So, yes and yes, right? And no and no on training the basics or the specialties. So going back to what we're talking about, sometimes if we get a finished dog, if you will, in terms of being titled in some type of sport discipline, a lot of times they'll have all of that all
sure.
ready. And so we just have to now gear that dog and break down some of those disciplines to cater them to police work. But if the dog comes to us with only knowing how to chase the ever living daylights out of whatever ball, Kong, tug, whatever prey drive or article or item of prey that we use, if they just know how to chase the piss out of the thing, latch hold of it and not let go, then we have to do everything that you're talking about. Typically speaking, we, at the time when I was working, we would get dogs anywhere from, we would like to get them from 12 to 18 months old.
Right.
That's, I'll tell you now, that's a rarity just because, the demand for these dogs is so high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sometimes we get them as young as, the youngest dog I ever selected was an eight month old Belgian Malinois. I can tell you now, if you would have told me earlier in my career as a trainer that I would select an 8 month old dog, I would have told you were crazy. But for whatever reason, this particular dog, he just, you know, you've been around animals. Like I tell people, like how many 18 year old people, you know, out there that 100% they act like they're 18 or 16 year olds. But how many 18 year olds do you have out there that act like they're 27, 28, 31 years old? They just, you know, they have that sense of maturity. And then, you know, the flip side of that is how many 30 and 40 year olds do you know that act like they're 12 year olds, right? So like, yeah. Just like people, the dogs, like right. it always varies what we get. So I say that to say this, we typically try to pick the dog like from that 12 to 18 month range. You know, sometimes we get them a little bit younger in that 10, 11 month range. And sometimes we'll get them up to the two and a half year mark, because a lot of times those dogs that are finished and have that.
Sure.
That
they're going to be a little older. Yeah.
They're gonna, right. And so, right. It's a double-edged sword going back to the earlier conversation that we had. You got to be careful what you ask for. Like if I pick this 2.5 year old dog that's got whatever titles under his or her belt, that's great. But in the grand scheme of things, that means that dog has had an extra year of running, jumping, flying, smashing into things, biting, having impact all on that body. So right. Now I've effectively diminished his or her work life for police work. So, you know, those are all things that you have to trade off and think about when you're selecting dogs. So, yeah, so it varies what's available. A lot of times we just go and we test the dogs and I'll be honest with you. A lot of times the age, I really don't put that into consideration unless if I have two like-minded or two close candidates. If one is significantly younger than the other, then yes, I will pick the younger of the two just so I can have more of a shelf life, if you will.
Yeah. What's the age range that they're working to? Cause the bigger dogs don't have quite as long of a life as a small dog. So,
right. So that's the $1 million question. Sometimes we get dogs that will work six, seven, 8 years okay. on the road.
Yeah.
And then others we've had dogs retire as early as God, maybe definitely less than a year on the road. So you're talking a dog that might be a year and a half, maybe definitely less than 2 years old, just because something may have shown its head that, sure. that didn't show in the initial medical screening of the dogs, right? So when we purchase these dogs, it's a big deal, right? Where
yeah.
you know, you're asking the city or the county or the state to spend anywhere at the time like between $9,000 to $17,000-$18,000 for one animal. Right? So that's
are there no breeding programs here where people breed dogs to supply?
There are. For the most part, a lot of the and this is my experience, a lot of the vendors that we deal with have traditionally been going overseas to Europe specifically to select these animals, because in Europe that the whole dog sport thing is a lot more what's the word I'm looking for?
More prevalent or less prevalent?
That and steeped with tradition, if you will.
Oh, so, okay, sure. Like yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
that they've been doing that for a very long time.
The Queen had hound dogs that you know
exactly
you don't
right.
see quite so as got, much hair. Yeah,
right. They've got the jump on us in terms of the lineage. Right, you have generations of dogs and lines that right. have been doing it. We typically find that they just have a higher offering, if you will. But that's not to take anything away from stateside. Yes, I've had a few dogs on my units that I've selected that were bred here in the States, and they worked out just fine.
I have a friend who breeds. I think it's Dutch Shepherds. Is that mm-hmm. what you call it?
Yes, ma'am.
It seemed like she got at least the original dogs or get some from Europe and then breeds here, you know.
Yep,
but
yep. And that's a lot of times what they'll do is they'll get that initial throw to get that bloodline into the mix, if you will. And then yeah, so that's common as well.
Oh, neat. So yeah. And do most forces have canines? Like a smaller you know, a city probably will. Does a smaller town like just in Florida, do most of them have a canine unit, or is that not as common? Or
For the most part, for smaller agencies, a lot of times they don't, just because it's a big financial responsibility.
Yeah.
Between the initial purchasing of the animal and not only the vet upkeep and the feedings, but now you're having to outfit a vehicle to have provisions for this animal, right? So you got to have heat sensor alarms and a cage and everything that goes along with it. So yeah, it's very expensive. And a lot of times the smaller agencies, they'll count on neighboring agencies or bigger agencies to kind of help them out if there's a need for a dog.
Yeah, I'm aware of a small town in Texas with someone I know. The dog does, you know, other counties as well, helps out. So if you have a police canine, the dog lives with you? You take the dog home with you?
Yes. For our particular agency, the animal came home with us and it was part of the family when he or she was at the house. It was just time to be a house dog, if you will. But, you know, like I tell everyone, it was having the best of both worlds, because it was having this dog at home that was well behaved, obedient, and they're like, I mean, you know, like we talked about, they know when it's time to work and when it's not. Like again, like going into cues and whether it's verbal or visual, they take everything in, right? Like when I'm getting dressed, when I'm putting my boots on, and you talk to any handler, they'll tell you the same thing. When I'm putting my vest on, my gun belt, the dog starts spinning around in a circle. Like, you know, that's all.
Oh yeah.
Again, it's just going back to classical conditioning, right? Like he knows or she knows that when dad or mom does this, this is going to follow. This is what's going to happen next. And this is essentially what the outcome is. So,
we just talked about that last week on our last podcast, Tommy, my co-host, who wasn't available today, said it's our unintentional training, or it's just the conditioning that's happening that we don't, like his dog goes and lays on the bed when he leaves, you know, and it's like their little routine, but he didn't teach him to do that. And yeah. And I help people unteach what they've done, which is like they get the leash out and they get the dog all fired up and like, you want to go out? You want to go out? And then you get to the point where you got this dog that you can't even snap the leash on because these are pet dogs I'm talking about.
Right.
So I fake them out. I get the leash out. I ask them, you know, I calm it down. We're going to go outside. They're all fair. So I'll sit down on the chair and, you know, like fake them out and not go out.
No.
So, yeah.
So make no mistake, we take everything from you guys. You guys are professional trainers, right? So at the end of the day, dog training is dog. Well, animal training is animal training is animal training, right? So regardless if it's a police dog or a pet, like at the end of the day, like this animal has to know what cause and effect are, what expectations are, what clear communication is, right? So like, regardless of if it's a working dog or not, like all the same rules apply. So yeah, 100%, like what you just described there, like I kind of do the same thing with my students, my handlers. I'm just like, hey, like, you know, if the animal exhibits this behavior because of this, I'm like, you know, like I always tell them, like, you know, my thing is like desensationalize it. Like, don't make it a big deal. Kind of ignore the behavior and let them know that, hey, if you want this, you have to act in a certain manner. You have to be right in this state of mind or whatnot before you get what you want or what, you know, or that payment, if you will. So yeah, 100%.
Well, that's where the training of the people comes in, because in my world,
100%.
It's the training of the people that cause, you know, the animal's just following suit. And my father had a saying, and I think of it so often, I'm a third generation trainer, that you got to be a little smarter than the animal you're training or working with. And I can't tell you how many times myself, I'll stop what I'm doing and sit down and think, you know, I know what my training program is, but I'll come at it a little different way because the animal is got the best of me, you know, and you can't get mad. I say you get incredulous, you know, like, are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah. You know,
it's important not to get angry about it, but you got to recognize when they're kind of one-upping you or they have you over a barrel, And so you got to say, okay, that's great. I love a smart animal. I'll take a smart animal all day long because they're always challenging you, but it keeps you on your toes. And it's to me, the magic of the animal training, you know?
Oh, 100%. It's funny you say that because now that I'm, you know, that I've got a little bit of time behind the wheel in this realm, yeah. 100% exactly what you're saying. Like when I deal with my dogs and my handlers, I 100% tell them, like, listen, you have got to be 3 to 4 to 5 steps ahead of this animal in terms of what your expectations are,
yeah.
How you're going to get there, what your payment's going to be, and also you have to have a caveat or an audible if things don't go. And you know, like I kind of joke with people, like. I always kind of say like, hey, listen, like if I tell you the routine is going to be A, B, and C, and we go to plan and you do A and B, and then all of a sudden I tell you to do Z, H, Y, and then do a 47 and a 22. Like I'm not doing these things just to have a laugh at you fumbling. Like it's because I know your dog. And like, what do you mean? Like this is the first time you've met my dog. I get that. I go, but I know this animal. I know this particular event, if you will, because
you saw it at A. You saw what you needed to see at A.
Yeah, and not only that, but fortunately for me, like I've had enough, I've had enough time behind Lee where, yeah, I've only met this dog today, but I saw this dog, whatever, 2 months ago, 2 years ago in Heidi's school. Like her little Malinois was acting the same way, and I can kind of see. So you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's just
sure.
Repetition. It's like we talked about. It's just being long in tooth and graying beard and knowing kind of what's gonna happen. So yeah, it's interesting to say that because I'm always like, hey, listen, number one, you gotta be 3 or 4 steps ahead of this animal. You gotta have contingencies. And you got to know when to say when. Exactly what you said. Like, you know, earlier in my career, in my training career, I was always a numbers guy. I was always a numbers guy. And meaning this, my entire life, I was into sports and fitness. So to me, like working out, okay, like or training for whatever event, football, whatever. Like, I know I have to go in the gym and I have to do X amount of time on this machine, or I have to do X amount of sets of reps on this, right?
And
then next week I can increase the weight by 5. Or so. Like to me, I was always like, okay, a routine is a routine. I got to have these numbers. And I used to take that application when I was training dogs, and I was like, all right. We got to get 5 good reps out of this dog, right? And I was adamant. I was always staunch about that. 5, 5, 5. And then you would get 4. You'd be like, holy, wow. And then you would get 5. And then what's the greed in you do? Let's get 6.
Oh, right? Yeah. One more time.
Or I'll even go back like, okay, we got 3 and then 4 was bad. Like, all right, let's try it again. Let's get that. And, you know, we would do 5. Okay, perfect. All right, we got 1, 2, 3, 4 was bad. We got 5. Technically, we've only got 4 good reps. We got to get to 5, right? And so like.
You got to know when to end on a good note and yeah, call it a success. 100%. Yeah.
100%. 100%. And now, you know, the wiser me, right? Now I know sometimes if I get a good response and I get a good pairing and a good clarity, I'll call it at the first one. I'm like, done, put them in the car.
Yeah. We want to reward them for their good behavior and let them know if they do what we need. Yeah. I totally agree.
100%. And a lot of that goes back to what you and I talked about, going back to learning actual animal behaviors and what clear communication really is. You know, one of my aha moments was I was at a bomb seminar with a bunch of cops, and they happened to have at the time SeaWorld had their own bomb dog unit, but they were all SeaWorld employees, so they were all legit professional animal trainers.
Interesting.
So yes. So they had this particular handler came out with, there was 3 or 4 of them, but this one particular handler came out with her little lab, and she was just basically smoked. Like she smoked the seminar. She just killed it. Like her and her little dog, the communication was clear. The dog, like the dog's, the dog knew what expectations were expected out of it. And the dog knew that, the timing and where he needed to be and what he needed to accomplish and the handler, the hurt again, her timing, everything was on point. And like, I was like, you know, even back then I was like, this girl is shit hot and I need to go and pick her brain. And so, you know, long and short, she kind of was like, yeah, absolutely. Come out and train with me anytime you want. And so I did. And just in talking to her, she goes, yeah, listen, like, first off, she's like, I'm not a dog trainer by trade per se. She was like in the Sea World rep. And this is going back, like, God, it's been at least 15 years, 10, sure. 15 years at least. But she's like, back then she was like, you know, how we rotate in the Sea World realm is we do our stints at whatever particular subset, if you will. She was like, so she's like, prior to coming to the dog unit, to the bomb dog unit, she was like, I was in birds for like 5 years. Wow. Birds. She was like, I did the sea lions and otters and whatnot. And she goes, and then finally I did dolphins. She's like, I never went and worked the whales. She goes, but I did dolphins for 4 or 5 years. And then she goes, you know what? This bomb dog thing came up and she's like, what the hell? I'll figure it out. And I'll try it. And she, cause like we talked about at the end of the day, like animal training is animal training. Right. And she was like, because, you know, we were talking about just, you know, different things and how at the time, like my ways were so archaic as far as just a lot of escape avoidance and compulsion training. She was, you know, listen, I kind of get where you're coming from. Like, I see why you guys do the things you do. She's like, but listen, I don't have that option. She goes, they don't make a choke chain, a prong collar or an e-collar big enough for Shamu. She goes, I don't even have that option. Right. Like, right. So like, yeah, we have to do these things that whether they manipulate the environment or shape the animal through its instinct to survive. Like, this is the avenue we have to. And she goes, and now it's just kind of like, we're training without emotions, if you will. Right. Like there's just, this is the way. And response.
Marine mammal trainers are really neat. A neat study, aren't they? Because it's 100%. True. They can't necessarily just wrangle them and manhandle or do any of that. And I grew up with elephants and it's similar, you know,
exactly.
You get, you know, 4-ton animal or more, and you got to get a little better training and creativity. Hank, I've so enjoyed talking with you. I'd love to do this again. And I know my co-host Tommy would like to join us for that as well. We could go on all day. I'm thoroughly enjoying this. Anything you want to wrap up with? By the way, thank you for your service as being a policeman. I so appreciate all that you folks do and wish the climate were different in today's world. That we took care of all of our first responders. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. That's reassuring to hear for sure. Yeah. So no, I have nothing else. I know I was, kind of all over the place. So I know that you're on a time schedule here. So 100%, I really didn't get to go probably cover all the things that you wanted to. So if you want,
I'd love to do it again. It'd be great.
But I would say if not, shoot me a call and we can talk offline and kind of have a better game plan, if you will, next time. So, cause there's a lot of stuff that obviously we didn't get to go into that I'm sure you would like to.
I would love to. I don't know if you're ever allowed to do it, but it'd be really cool to watch you work if you're ever in, you know, around Florida or that, and there's an opportunity cause I'm really fascinated with it. I'm going to go home and work on my big poodle to be a scent dog.
You know, that's so, it's funny you say that. I kind of, some of the stuff I do, I've gone into nose work, right? With the scented oils and whatnot. I've worked out with a couple of groups doing that.
That's really cool. I'm totally infatuated with this, and it's always fun to talk about training for me. So thank you again, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
You're quite welcome. Take care.
Well, that was a lively and lengthy conversation, but I hope you got as much out of it as I did. I really enjoyed it. I really do want to shadow him and watch him train some dogs. Otis, I'm coming home. We're going to learn some scent work, so be ready. Also, training tip. Tommy wasn't able to make it today. He actually had an emergency with the horse, so he's off taking care of that. It's always about the animals. But the training tip that I want to leave you with today is really what I said at the beginning of the podcast. Think about setting your bar higher. If you're having trouble with your dog at home, and we talk primarily about dogs on this podcast, but you know, think about setting the bar higher. Usually it's something we're doing, or your dog did not get a good foundation, which is really critical to the success of the training and the overall well-being of your animal. So think about that. I just had a board and train dog this week, and I just went back and worked on the foundation. And you can teach an old dog new tricks, whether it's a dog from your local shelter or a puppy that you're getting. They got to have a good foundation, got to have a good start. If they didn't get a good start, go back up and do that. And then set your bar high and ask a lot. Remember, this is the dog who, when you hold a bowl of food, will do everything under the sun. They'll turn back somersaults for you. You put the food down and they can't remember how to sit. Well, that's on you. Get incredulous and be like, are you kidding me? Really? That keeps it from getting anger, diffusing any anger you have. And it also reminds you that you need to set your bar higher. So always reach out to me. I'm happy to answer any training questions. And if you live nearby, happy to help you out with your training. And I hope you enjoyed, the podcast today. Please subscribe so you don't miss any. Rate and review the podcast. And please share it. It's important to share these stories. And I hope you'll join me next time. There's always a lot of doggone good information.